Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Positively a great week for baseball here, a warm summer week. Make sure everybody's staying cool out there as we get through this summer and this pennant race. Luke Jones joins us now. We're going to be on Thursday talking pennant race, and the Dodgers series will be over by the time we make it back out to not State Fair, not El Guapo. We're going to be at Beaumont. We're going to be at the Beaumont on the corner of Beaumont and Frederick on Thursday from 2 until 5. We're going to be doing our 25th anniversary 2 weeks from now on August 3rd and 4th at Drug City on the 4th. Costas on the 3rd. Lots and lots of stuff to give away on the 3rd. I'll be telling you more and more about that. Certainly for the Orioles, giving away hope at this point. Luke spent the weekend at the ballpark after the big sweep of the Miami Marlins. A little bit of trouble there late in the afternoon on Sunday when I was over Costas cracking crabs, but they made it through and made it through enough that, you know, Mike Elias was on the broadcast on Friday night as they kicked off the second half of the season talking about, we'll see Grayson Rodriguez soon. Well, I think deep down we knew that, how he's pitching down in Norfolk, but this feels like the right time, right? And much like Palmer struggled in the beginning and Brooks struggled in the beginning, Grayson Rodriguez getting shipped out was not part of the original grand plan, was it?
No, it wasn't. Well, and keep in mind, part of the original plan was that he was going to make the team out of spring training. He had an uneven spring, did not make the initial opening day rotation. We already mentioned in our previous segment, Kyle Bradish was the one who took the line drive off his foot and landed on the IL for a short time in April, and that opened the door for Grayson to be recalled. Ideally, because the command hadn't been as sharp in spring training, they wanted him to work on some things. A lot of people at the time scoffed at that notion and said, oh, the Orioles are just manipulating service time. And, you know, because baseball teams are apt to do that sometimes, not just the Orioles, but anyone.
Not this franchise. They wouldn't do that.
It was clear. But it was clear in his 10 starts with the Orioles. And look, let's be very clear. You look at the body of work and you say, all right, well, he had a 7.35 ERA. He allowed 13 home runs in 45 and a third innings. He did have some good outings. You know, he had some good outings and he had some bad outings. The problem was the bad outings were really bad, and it put them in a tough position with their bullpen at the time. So you saw the lack of fastball command got him into trouble. You know, when you throw in the high 90s, you can get away with not commanding the fastball perfectly in the minors because most of those guys can't hit it anyway. So you can be wild within the strike zone. Heck, you can be out of the strike zone, and guys are trying to time it up and try to guess on your fastball, and they're going to swing and miss through it. Major leagues, it doesn't work that way. You know, you have to be much more fine. You have to be much more precise, and that's something that Grayson Rodriguez ran into trouble with. So keep in mind, he had the awful last start against the Rangers. They demoted him at the time, and they said, hey, need to go down the triple A. Need to work on your command, need to work specifically on your fastball command, go do it, you'll be back. To your point, even some of the greatest of all time, even some of the greatest Orioles or elsewhere, struggle initially. You know, it's really difficult to do. It's the highest level. The jump from AAA to the majors is immense. So what has he done since going back down to AAA? You know, as he is back this week, and we'll see what happens here moving forward, but a 1.69 ERA and 54 strikeouts, 15 walks over 37 and a third innings with the Tides since being demoted. They saw everything, at least what they're saying anyway, everything they wanted to see, and we're going to see how it plays out. That doesn't mean it's going to be perfect. It doesn't mean that he's guaranteed to stay in the rotation, but
I forgot he made 10 starts. If you would ask me, I would have said it was six. You know what I mean? Like without looking at it didn't feel like he was here that long.
It's a long season, right? I mean, he was up in early April and he was back down before Memorial Day. So, I mean, that was roughly a third of the season. So, you know, you look at it and you say, well, we're 2 weeks from the trade deadline, roughly, you know, give or take a few days, depending on when anyone's listening to this. And you're trying to weigh what you can do. Certainly doing better than Cole Irvin as your number five starter. That's the immediate hope right here, right? I mean, he wasn't giving them much in that role. If he can be a nice long man out of the bullpen for them, then great. You know, you've I don't know if it fortifies your bullpen, but you at least have more length out there from someone with some experience.
Well, you'd like to think you've upgraded the ceiling of the rotation too, because is your number one. This is your Jim Palmer. I mean, talk about all this trading deadline and this and Gibson and, you know, what Bradish might be and what he was on Sunday, but This is the great hope, really. I mean, if this guy doesn't pan out, you know, that speaks to trouble for the next couple of years for them in regard to pitching, because they'll have to go buy it at that point, right?
Buy it, or you're going to have to go trade prospects for it, as a lot of people are talking about them doing right now to go.
And that's
get
a heavier price, really, when it comes down to it for this organization.
Because you have to give up assets, and then, okay, what's the contractual control look like? I mean, is it a rental? Is it someone that's signed through next year? You know, typically that's what you're looking at in most cases. So look, on paper, I'd love to have Lucas Giolito, for example, but what are you going to have to give up to get him? And, you know, in terms of what it takes to keep him long term, I mean, those are great questions. You would much rather be able to plug Grayson Rodriguez into the rotation. And no, he's not Lucas Giolito right now. He's not Jim Palmer right now, to you using that analogy. But you're hoping in the next couple of years he could be their best pitcher. You know, and he has that kind of pedigree. This isn't someone that the Orioles hyped internally, as we've seen with pitchers in the past. This is a guy that widely regarded going into 2023, consensus top 10 prospect in all of baseball. And over the last 2 years, the consensus, I'd say consensus, considered the best right-handed starting pitching prospect in baseball over the last couple of years. We know last year took a toll on him. I think at this point now, with hindsight and looking at the injury, he missed 3 months last year with that lat strain. I don't think it's a case of him not being healthy earlier in the year, but I do think that time missed was, that harmed his development some. He was on such a swift path to being in the majors last June, and he lost half a season then. I think that takes a toll on you sometimes, mentally as much as physically, and maybe it did throw his mechanics off a little bit, but he's done everything they could have asked since going back to Norfolk. He's pitched well. You know, specifically his last two full outings for the Tides, he was really good. And I think at this point in time now, you bring him back. It doesn't mean that these next couple weeks are everything as it pertains to him and how Mike Elias proceeds with the trade deadline. But you do want to see, at the very least, can this guy show like he belongs as one of their most consistent top five starters, where you kind of expect him to be in the rotation the rest of the year. Now, I think it's also worth mentioning, and this is something the Orioles haven't talked about a lot because they're not going to broadcast this, but we also have to keep in mind what is the reality for him with his innings and his workload this year. I don't think the Orioles are a team that look at innings limits in terms of like some kind of gospel where, okay, this guy cannot dare pitch one more inning than X for the 2023 season. However, you look at last year because he missed those three months, so it's hard to gauge in that way. You look at what his workload was in 2021. He had no 2020 season other than working out in Bowie. So you're trying to figure out, okay, how many innings does he have for them the rest of the year? And I think he still has plenty, let's be clear, but I don't think it's a case where there aren't any reins whatsoever on him either. So that's where you slot him into the fifth spot in the rotation. Might you periodically skip him a couple times here and there with off days and things of that nature down the stretch? Might you do what the Orioles did with Tyler Wells last year, which was shorten him up? He might have some starts where you say, we only want him to go 75 pitches in this outing because we're trying to manage this because we want him available for September and October. So I think that's a factor as well. But let's be clear. He has to pitch well for that to even be a factor. If he doesn't pitch well, then it's a moot point, right? And then you're talking about him, going back to the minors, or maybe he's in the bullpen for the rest of the year, something along those lines. And I'm not saying that's what I expect. I'm just saying he has to pitch well for that part of the conversation to come into play. So that's part of this. And I think that's another factor here as Mike Elias is weighing what to do between now and the trade deadline in terms of opportunities to try to fortify this club. But let's not misconstrue. If Grayson Rodriguez comes up and pitches like he's capable of pitching, then that's as good of an addition as, I don't want to say any pitcher you go out and get at the trade deadline, because that would be.
But if he can give you five or six innings every night, two or three runs, and be good enough at this point, that's better than whatever you're going to buy and have to give up Jackson Holliday for it. I'm making that up, but you know what I mean.
Exactly. He's free right now, right? He can come up and he's already part of you.
And cheap.
Yeah, exactly. He's free in terms of you don't have to give up anything to get him, and he's making the league minimum right now. So there's that part that I'm sure would please John Angelos. But the point is, he's got the upside, and you just said it. I mean, this is such an upside play for the Orioles. It was before the season even started. I love what Kyle Bradish has done. I love what Tyler Wells has done, but Grayson Rodriguez, from a talent standpoint, is the easily the most talented pitcher they have in their organization. Now, that does not mean that that's going to come to fruition for the rest of 2023. But as you have a couple weeks to go with the trade deadline and you're weighing what you might potentially do or what you might not do at the trade deadline, you certainly need to get him back up here and pitching, seeing how he fares, not just against, not just in this first start, but as moving forward here, the next few starts. And you're hoping that he made the adjustments because we saw the flashes. As much as the fastball command was an issue, the secondary stuff played for the most part. It did. It's just he got into some bad counts and the pitch efficiency wasn't there. And then, he'd throw a 98 mile per hour fastball that he didn't know exactly where it was going and it was wild within the zone. And then he'd get hammered. So if he's made that adjustment, then I think he's got a chance to pitch really well for them. And let's remember, as we've given some love here because of what Kyle Bradish did against the Marlins, what Dean Kramer did Friday night. Keep in mind how much those guys struggled. I mean, Dean Kramer 2 years ago, the way he struggled, immense. He had a seven ER, whatever it was, seven something ERA, like Grayson Rodriguez did earlier this year. Bradish struggled the first half of last year, but we saw the Orioles, what those guys, they go down, make some adjustments. We saw patience, and then both of those individuals pitched so well for them over the final 2 months last year. And we've seen it, for the most part this year. Kramer a little less consistent, but
Patience is
you're
different
hoping
though
that Grayson
when you're in a
Rodriguez.
pennant race, though. It's going to be different this year for them. It
It
was the
is,
first time around
but
when
I
they
will
shipped him
say,
out, right? If this isn't good enough, you got to go
it
back,
was,
right?
it was. But in fairness, let's also, and look, they weren't 20 plus games over 500, but they were in a wild card race last year. I mean, go look at where they were. People may not have believed that they were going to make it, but they were in it. They were playing big games last year. So you're hoping that Grayson Rodriguez follows a similar path to a Kyle Bradish, a Dean Kramer. Only the difference is he has the upside to be even better than those individuals. Not saying that's going to happen this year. In fact, I'd bet on it not happening this year to that degree. But from a long-term standpoint, yeah, this is the guy that you're hoping is going to be your ace because that's a heck of a lot better than having to go out and get one, So we'll see how it plays out. And I think at the very least, he can give them a really nice lift here down the stretch and absolutely be in play to, someone that, who knows, could pitch for them in October and do some really exciting things for them.
By the time people hear this, he's going to have pitched on a Monday night against the Dodgers. We'll have all the results, but the big picture of the next 2 weeks for Elias, let's drill down on needs and wants. And if Rodriguez is this, the next two starts, you feel differently about him. But where are the targets? Where are the starting pitching targets? Where are the? I mean, I saw somebody put out on Facebook the kid from the Brewers who has 1 year left. I'm like, they're in a pennant race. I don't, you better be dealing from the bottom of the deck, right? And I don't even mean the Padres, right? I mean, who might be out of it, but certainly talked last week at the All-Star game like they're in it. You're trying to identify bad teams with good pitchers. Hard to do. And then trying to make it work and trying to beat other teams to it and having the prospects there. The Orioles have not been that team. They have not been that team since Andrew Miller. It's been a decade, right? Since they've been in this position to fortify, right? It's a whole different way of looking at it, especially when you have this deep depth in the organization and you feel like this halo of the next 3 to 5 years is going to be grand, that you don't want to give away the farm for an Andrew Miller. But where are you 2 weeks from now on what would feel like a good acquisition versus a bad acquisition? I don't mean giving away minor, if they deal DL Hall, whatever they do, right? But I'm talking about what makes this team better. Who is the Andrew Miller? Who is the starting pitcher that's going to come in here?
Yeah, I mean that's what's so tough now, Nestor. I mean, I feel, and I don't just say this personally. I think a lot of people look at this. It's tough to recalibrate because now you have three wild cards in each league. I mean, and look, you start at the top with, I mean, the Angels. There's so much talk. Are they going to deal Ohtani or not? And ownership says they don't want to. But then, I mean, they blew a game on Sunday Night Baseball. That was just a backbreaker for them against the Astros. They give up, what, 4 or 5 runs in the ninth inning and they lose. I mean, so you have those teams. I mean, look at the Padres. I mean, you know, Blake Snell could be available. I mean, you're talking about a rental. I mean, that would be a, you know, yeah. Would someone like that make the Orioles rotation better? Yeah, but what are you having to give up to do that? So that's where it's just so
difficult.
Well,
more than the second place team would, right? I mean, there's going to be some competition. And there are other teams that feel a lot more desperate to pick up a pitcher than maybe the Orioles do at this point. The Orioles don't feel desperate to me.
Yeah, I mean, I would still very much, and again, I've said this, I've alluded to this for a while, but I feel, you know, Sunday kind of brought it into focus, so to speak. And that sounds silly saying that because, you know, I'm the first guy that's like, hey, small samples, you know, don't fall into narratives.
Saying between my third and fourth crab at Costas when they blew a 5-0 lead and they almost lost the baseball game, that made you, Mike Elias, nervous that I got to make a deal here? Were you on that?
I mean, look, I'm not saying it has to be Josh Hader. You know, I don't think it has to be Josh Hader. It doesn't have to be that reliever. But can you add another reliever where it's someone you feel really good about pitching high leverage for you? Someone that's coming in the 7th or 8th inning in a 1-run game. Someone that's saying, hey, Yennier Cano is not available tonight, but we have Felix Bautista. We need someone to pitch the 8th inning in a 1-run game to get us to Bautista in the 9th. Can you go out and get that guy? And look, I don't have every team's second or third best reliever memorized by heart.
Well, Josh Hader could do that.
I mean, he could, but again, how much are you going to have to give up to get someone like that? And, you know, again, a rental compared to, can you get someone that has an extra year of club control, someone that you acquire that you also have next year? You know, to me, that's kind of, that would be the ideal sweet spot for the Orioles, you know, but because you're going to have to give up something, right? I mean, you're going to have to give up Joey Ortiz, you know, Connor Norby, you know, like, not their best prospects, but prospects that are in their system. You're going to have to give up something to get something. You know, let's be clear about that. You're not, you know, you're not just going to try to swindle someone. I mean, you love what you can, but that's not how it generally works. So, but if you can add another bullpen arm to this, to what they already have, I think that makes Brian Baker better. I think that makes Danny Coulomb better, who can truly move back into a situational lefty kind of role, which I think he's been really good when he's been in that role. You know, I think it makes Mike Bauman better when, you know, he's someone that can pitch the 6th or the 7th rather than the 7th or the 8th on any given.
What about the injury relievers? I just give it allows you to see the rest of these
everyone
guys.
Else. Honestly, at this point,
Means,
I mean, Michael Gibbons is on the 60-day IL. Means, look, I think Means has a very reasonable chance to pitch for them this year. Now, what does that look like? Is that going to be a case where, you know, and we've talked so much about Grayson Rodriguez, could John Means be starting games for them in September? I mean, hypothetically, could he? Sure. Are you expecting that? I think that's tough to expect that. I think that's tough to say John Means, who hasn't pitched competitively since Tommy John surgery back in April of last year, to come in and he's going to pitch in a pennant race. Now, I think what's interesting, though, is could you slot him into some kind of role where maybe he does what he did for the Orioles in the beginning, which was, you know, he was kind of a 2-inning reliever back in 2019, early in the year before they kind of said, hey, he's one of our best starters. And then they said, hey, he's our best starter. So is there a role for John Means potentially to do that? I think it's possible. But again, can you count on that? No. And you're certainly not going to have any more clarity on that before the trade deadline. So you're kind of, that's a bonus, if anything else. That's how I view that. Givens, you know, he's throwing in Sarasota, but Brandon Hyde, most recently over the weekend, he was asked about him and said he's still a few weeks away. Dylan Tate is not even playing catch right now. So I think counting on him at this point, you know, this is pure speculation, but, you know, I fear Tommy John is more likely than him pitching at a high level for them this year. Again, I haven't heard that, but you read the tea leaves. He hasn't been right since the offseason with the forearm and the elbow. So, you know, CNL Perez is getting ready to come back. Had a really nice rehab outing at Bowie. In fairness, even though he's had a rough year, he had pitched quite well his last 4 or 5 times out before having a little bit of arm soreness. So, you know, can he be part of the equation? Sure. Is he the guy that I feel is fortifying them and making their bullpen great or better than it already is? You know, tough on that. So I still think there's a deal out there. if it makes sense, you're not giving up your absolute best prospects to go out and add another high leverage reliever. That's what I'd really like to see them do. I think that's what, for me, when I look on the scale of realistic to the least realistic, I feel like that's the most realistic move we might see Michael Elias make. And look, it's much sexier to talk about a starting pitcher, right? You know, to go out and get that true ace. And I'm not saying I'm opposed to that, but it's just, you're giving up a lot for that. And you have to be careful not to acquire someone that's masquerading as an ace. You know, you don't want to go out and get someone that, oh, this guy's going to make us so much better. And then you realize, well, he's not that much better than what we already have.
Ubaldo Jimenez. Let's throw him in. I want to talk about him.
Well, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's a tough name to bring up in these parts.
Well, that would be bringing another Kyle Gibson in, right? I mean, you're not happy with another 35-year-old trash man that might get you 5 or 6 innings, another Sutcliffe kind of guy, right? Like, to me, that doesn't move the needle around here.
I'm happy with that if you're not giving up anything to get that guy. But if you're giving up something real in terms of your minor league system to get that guy, then yeah, I don't love that. So again, that's where I would really much more be focused on the bullpen. I think for me, that's the balance of need and also what can be reasonable to go acquire that's not going to hurt my farm system over the next few years in terms of, you know, I'd love to see Shohei Ohtani in orange and black as much as anyone in a dream world. That would be so much fun. I mean, that guy's unbelievable, but just to rent him, what you would have to give up is just, you know, it'd be extraordinary. And that's why I still don't know if the Angels even going to move him. I mean, I still think they're going to try to hold on to some hope of signing him or making a wild card run or whatever, although it doesn't look likely. But again, I feel like if you're asking me what's the sweet spot between maintaining your long-term farm system organizational health and improving your odds for this October, I do think it's bullpen help. Now, again, who are the teams that are going to sell? Because it's so tough because, you know, you look at the standings, you know, you look at the standings as we're in the middle of July, you have some teams that look like, you know, they should consider themselves out of it. And well, they're not in terms of the wild card standings. You know, you look at a team that, you know, I mean, look at, you know, I just mentioned the Angels, you know, the Mariners are 500, the Yankees, you know, look at the Yankees and the Red Sox at the bottom of the AL East. You know, they've got to pass multiple teams to get back into a wild card spot. But in terms of games out, it's not unrealistic. So, you know, you look at those kinds of teams and say, you know, are you going to be a buyer? Are you going to be a seller? Or are you just going to stand pat? So it's where it's so tough to gauge this. And that's, you know, that's part of the challenge for Mike Elias. He hasn't been in this position. Even last year, he was selling at the trade deadline. They traded Mancini. They traded Jorge Lopez. So he's in a very unique position in which he has not been in. So it's going to be interesting to see how he plays out. But again, if you're asking me what's most likely, I feel it's adding a bullpen arm to the picture. And because I think you're going to have to give up something for that. You're not going to get that for free or just for spare parts, but you're not going to have to give up one of your very best prospects in order to land a bullpen arm that I think you can kind of slot in there into that, you know, third best reliever behind Bautista and Cano.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore. And Luke, you can find him at the ballpark here in the early part of the week as the LA Dodgers come to town, getting out of here on a business person special on Wednesday afternoon. Bird's taking it back to the road. It's been a nice start to the homestand here through all of this. DL Hall and the rest of the organizational depth of pitching, and I always say Bruce Zimmerman because, you know, he's Baltimore. I like him. Yeah. But what's behind Rodriguez? What else is going on? We always hear about the bats at Norfolk. Is there anything in the organization that they would look at and say, maybe in August, other than John Means?
Yeah, I mean, John Means, I think he'll be pitching somewhere come August, but I think, you know, he's going to need some minor league rehab. But, you know, DL Hall's the interesting one in the sense of, remember, he had the back issue over the winter, delayed him in spring training. He gets to Norfolk and the velocity was down, and it's not because there's an arm issue, but it's just that back issue. Anyone, and certainly you can attest to this as someone who has had back issues in the past.
I lost my press credentials because I had a backache. Ask Chad Steele. He'll tell you.
Whether you're an athlete or whether you're just, you know, your everyday living, I mean, that can be so detrimental to anything you try to do. But they got to the point at Norfolk where, you know, his velocity wasn't great, and they just, he wasn't strong enough. They sent him to Norfolk, or they sent him to Sarasota just to kind of get on a strength program. Now, they've been very quiet about that, and, you know, we'll see how this plays out in the coming weeks. You know, could DL Hall factor into their bullpen late in the year? I think it's possible. I mean, we saw that last year. He pitched out of the pen in September and did some nice things for them last year. So, you know, you asked me at Triple A, you know, who at Triple A? I mean, look, I'm not saying that there aren't a couple guys here or there that couldn't come up and give them some decent innings here or there, but is there a difference maker? You know, is there someone that's knocking on the door loudly at Triple A saying, I'm ready for an opportunity to be a really serious piece to what the Orioles are doing at the major league level on the pitching side? I think that would be ambitious.
Well, Cano wasn't that guy 90 days ago, right?
True. I mean, yeah, Yennier Cano, people were wondering in the offseason why he's still on the 40-man roster. So, you know, you never do know, I suppose. But, you know, I think, you know, DL Hall, you know, we'll see. Later in the year, could he be a bullpen piece for them? On the position player side, I already mentioned, I mean, Heston Kerstad is at Triple A. You know, he's been one of the great stories in the organization over the last year. I mean, you know, you think about what happened to him after he was drafted, and he has myocarditis with the heart issue, and you know, had the bad hamstring issue to start spring training last year. So he's been through a lot, but he's raked. All he's done is rake this year. Could he be a factor for them later this year? Well, probably depends on the health of the roster, right? I mean, we've talked about that. And Cedric Mullins, you know, goes down with some quad tightness over the weekend, although it seems like a day-to-day situation. And, you know, Colton Cowser is playing center field over the weekend. So you never truly know, but, you know, that's where I keep coming back to the pitching, you know, and the bullpen, you know, if you can add another bullpen piece, because there are guys at Triple A, but I think we've seen those guys. You know, it's been Logan Gillespie. You know, we saw Edward Bizzardo on Sunday, and that did not go well. So that's not to say that those guys won't get another chance at some point, but you know, there isn't that one guy that you just say, wow, they've got to get him in the major leagues. Grayson Rodriguez is that guy. We're going to see that hopefully see how that works out with the rotation again. So we'll see how it plays out. You never know. You know, there's secret sauce to this, right? I mean, in fairness.
Well, you've allegedly added 12 to 15 innings a week by bringing Rodriguez up, right? That you fortified, you know, there should be 12 to 14 innings this week and next week and the week after that by the end of the month, you'd say, well, he's going to pitch 40 more innings here, you know, at some point. And if he's going to do it here or do it in Norfolk, let's have him do it here and see if he can win 4 out of 5 ball games. Let's see if he can give us a chance to win, because if you do that, you wake up on July 31st feeling differently than you did last week at the All-Star break about the rotation.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, he's tossed at this point, you know, that going into hit this return and pitching against the Dodgers and everything that played out there, but 86 and two-thirds innings between Baltimore and Norfolk, his career high in innings 2 years ago, which keep in mind, he was hurt last year, but he had 103 innings. So, you know, he's 16 innings off of what his career high is in professional baseball. So, you know, he's got innings, but you might have to manage it a little bit. But if you think he's ready, if you think he's made the adjustments that you wanted him to make back in June, you know, when you sent him down at Memorial Day weekend, then by all means, bring him up and see what it looks like. And if it doesn't look great, then, well, you can send him back down, and then you're in no worse off than you were a week ago. But you want to see.
Oh, then you're much more desperate to make a deal if you're Elias.
Yeah. And it's tough. I mean, you know, it's only a 2 week. We're only going to be talking about a few starts that he makes between now and the trade deadline. I mean, that's how we're only 2 weeks.
Well, these are really important starts in that case, right?
Well, they are, but you don't want to. I guess my point is you don't want to make too much out of it, good or bad, right? But
so you think if he looks good for really good for three starts, that Elias would still go out to try to get a starter? You think?
I think you're exploring. You should be exploring every avenue in the same way Eric DaCosta, you know, with the Ravens. How many times have we seen the Ravens sign a player at a position where you say, well, like last year, it's perfect. You know, they drafted Kyle Hamilton after they had already signed Marcus Williams. It's, well, he was the best player on the board. That was. That was the player he identified at that point, that moment in time, and saying, that guy can make us better, even if that's not our biggest need right now. So, you know, being a little wishy-washy and saying that, but the point is, Grayson Rodriguez is already here. Hypothetical pitcher you go out and get at the trade deadline. One, how much is it going to cost to get him? Two, is he available? Three, is he going to acclimate? Four, what kind of impact is he actually going to make for you? Because everyone loves the story of Justin Verlander going to the Astros, Randy Johnson being traded way back when going to the Astros.
Oh, it's a great press conference when you make the trade, right?
No, I'm not even talking about the – I mean, yes, that's part of it. I'm not even talking about – I'm talking about the guys that actually go out and, you know, they're acquired and they help your team win a World Series. For every guy like that, how many guys are acquired? And even if they perform well, that team still doesn't win the World Series. Or even worse, sometimes those guys are acquired and – they're really underwhelming. You know, we've seen stars even be acquired and aren't great for somewhere else they go.
Well, there's a lot of pressure when you're coming into a pennant race when you stunk for 3 months and now you have to come in and get the ball and everybody's looking at you and you're the new guy.
Yeah.
And you might be coming with a $20 million contract, you know, into a place where all these young guys don't have any money. There's something about messing with the chemistry, you know, that with this team specifically, I don't know. You know, I do, that's why I begin at the beginning and say I'm not of the mindset that they have to make a deal and that it has to be impactful, that they've been pretty good as it is.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And let me be clear, when I keep saying to explore every avenue, if it turns out that the right deal never materializes for them, I'm okay with that. Again, I'd love to see another bullpen arm. That's what I'd really like to see for them, because I think that's the middle ground here, where not having to trade Jackson Holliday, you know, you're not having to trade Heston Kerstad for that. But it's someone that I think can impact them, even if it's just a rental piece and you're not giving up quite as much there. You know, you're giving up something, but it's not dramatic. You know, it's not changing the long-term outlook of your farm system in the way that if you dealt Jackson Holliday for Shohei Ohtani, you know, it'd be great to have him for right now, but then when he leaves as a free agent, then, well, you don't have Jackson Holliday for the next 6 years or 7 years, whatever it is. So, but yeah, that's the thing with where they are right now. And look, there's going to be shuffling that goes on, and they're going to have a roster decision they're going to have to make here at some point, because they're not going to be able to continue to go with 14 position players and 12 pitchers. And it's going to be tough to decide how that's going to work out if everyone stays healthy. And, you know, Mullins, you know, getting banged up over the weekend, assuming he's going to be fine in the next couple of days.
Hicks,
you
know, hasn't been right that. Either, right?
Yeah, I mean, he had some lower back soreness. But if everyone's healthy, is it Ryan, you know, is Ryan Mountcastle going to be on this roster because he hits left-handed pitching as a first baseman that you platoon with Ryan O'Hearn, who has absolutely outplayed Mountcastle this year? Or does Mountcastle get options for the time being? He's got options remaining. You know, he's got a .265 on base percentage. I mean, you know, he's not on
Scott Norfolk anymore. Go down to Norfolk and figure it out, young man.
Yeah. You know, whether it's that, whether it's, you know, could I wouldn't want to see them do this, but I wouldn't be shocked to see it happen for the time being. Could Colton Cowser go back to AAA for the time being? You know, maybe. I'd like to see him play because, you know, you called him up and he did everything you want him to do at Norfolk. You know, Jorge Mateo, he's not a starting player for them anymore, other than we're seeing him start against left-handed pitching. We've seen Gunnar Henderson play a lot of shortstop and even play shortstop well. You know, Mateo's out of options, though. So if you take him off the 26-man roster, you have to DFA him. So my point is, it's already getting tight from a roster construction standpoint. And let's be clear, that's a good thing. You want to have options. You want to have tough decisions to make. Talk about this with the Ravens at the end of August, every summer. Who's on the 53-man roster? Can they carry that extra young corner? Can they carry that extra veteran defensive lineman that you'd like to have in your rotation? Or do you run out of space? So they're going to have some of that, and there are going to be changes. You know, they're not going to – their roster is not going to stay what it is right now. There will be some – there's going to be some fluidity. Even if they – don't make a trade at the trade deadline. You know, there'll be some moving parts here and there, but, you know, it really is a case of, you know, just trying to figure out how can you get a little bit better, because they don't have to get a lot better. I mean, they can't get much better, realistically speaking, in terms of just other than just Gunnar Henderson's more experienced and you know, continues to get better as the year goes on, you know, just as one example. But, you know, you're looking at this and you said it, and I agree with you generally speaking, as much as I would like to see it, the right deal come into place and to add a piece, they're in pretty good shape even without that, right? So it really does speak to just how steady they've been, how relentless they've been. I mean, Saturday was such a great example of that. You know, you fall behind early and you know, they don't panic. They had good at bats and get back in it. And, you know, then Gunnar Henderson hits a home run and ties it up and, you know, you win a couple innings later. I mean, it's been their formula all year. And I don't know if that's going to carry them to a World Series in 2023, but I think it has them on a really good path here. Not just this year, but thinking about it long-term. And that's where you look at this thing and say, yes, if you can add a piece to make yourself better, to increase your chances this year, great. But you don't want to do anything that's going to mess that up long-term, because unlike talking about 2014 or certainly 2016, where it was very clear that their window was closing, this is, you know, their window's just opening and it feels like it's wide open. So you don't want to do anything that's going to mess with that long-term. So again, doesn't make for great radio, because, you know, you and I disagree and fight on things all the time and all that. But for the most part, I generally agree with you that if the right deal is there at a reasonable price, God bless, do it. But if it's not, don't force it. You know, don't feel that you have to do something just for the sake of doing it, because that's when teams tend to run into problems.
Let the Yankees go rent Shohei Ohtani for a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I'm fascinated to see what's going to happen there. I really am, because the Angels, I mean, you have to ask for the moon, and we know that teams value prospects more than ever in today's game. I mean, look at how many great,
especially cheap teams, especially broke teams.
Yeah. Well, but smart teams also, because they truly are the best value. These guys.
But Jackson Holliday means more to us than he does to the Dodgers.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
he does. I think
when you're regarding assets and resources, our resources are limited against the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Angels or any of the bigger markets. I mean, I talked to Dave Shinen at length about this. So to promote our Maryland Crab Cake tour, we were at Coco's the other day. Dave Shinen, longtime Washington Post writer. We had a brawl. We sat, me, him, and Rasig, we sat and had it all out about baseball. And I said, the real issue here is that the original sin is that it isn't equal. It's not like the NHL or the NBA or the NFL, where everybody has the same amount of money, that when you have a Jackson Holliday or a Grayson Rodriguez under team control, as we say, I mean, no different than paying Lamar Jackson a lot less than you should be paying him. And he's winning a lot more games than you think in football, but in baseball, it's way different when you're going to deal a young prospect. For the Yankees to give up three prospects for Shohei Ohtani, for the bright lights and what their organization represents, that's a whole lot different. They can deal from the bottom of the deck different than the Orioles can, or than the Reds can right now even.
They can, but I will also say, again, look at how it's changed. You don't see as many of those premium. And I'm not talking prospects like, oh, he's number 56 on Baseball America's top 100 list. I'm talking those top five prospects in all of baseball. You're not seeing those guys moved as often as you used to. I mean, you're just not. Even the rich teams still recognize when you've got someone like that. And Jackson Holliday's, you know, he was in the futures game. He's already getting, you know, he was intentionally walked at Bowie, you know, in the tight game late just a couple days ago. It speaks to his reputation is quickly spreading in terms of what he can do. Those guys, you know, you're just not going to see guys like that moved very often at all anymore. And it's not to say they were moved all the time in the past, but teams like the Yankees would be willing to do that. You know, I feel as time's going on, even the richest teams are recognizing, boy, that's a really...
Well, that's all the more reason to think Ohtani's not going anywhere, because no one's going to pay a lot and the Angels aren't going to give him away.
And that's the thing. I really... It's crazy to say this because, I mean, he's the best player in baseball. I mean, he is. But is there a team that is truly going to be willing to give up what it's going to take, what the Angels are going to be willing to say, all right, our fan base is going to hate us for this because we squandered Ohtani and Trout for the last several years and we didn't win a darn thing. But so we'll take this. is a team going to give them that asking price, knowing full well that Shohei Ohtani is probably hell-bent on hitting the market because he's going to see if some team's going to pay him $50 million a year to pitch and hit. So it's just such a unique situation that, I mean, I'm just fascinated to see how it's going to play out. But that's where my gut still tells me he's going to end up being there, and then he'll just walk at the end of the year, and the Angels' misery will be even more miserable than it's been. So,
I hope the Giants sign things up. You know, I mean, I want to see the Giants back in the mix. You know, he's going to play on the West Coast,
sure.
Right? I mean, that's pretty obvious. Yeah,
you would think so. I mean, that seems to be the
You'd almost like to see the Mariners like go into their kitty and like get after him. You know what I mean?
Well, he got the big ovation, you know, during the All-Star game there. So, I mean, look, any team in baseball would love to have Shohei Ohtani, but how do you get him? How do you pay for him? How do you try? And this is me getting a little nerdier about it. How do you try to project someone like that? You know, you're not signing Shohei Ohtani for 3 years. Let's be clear. You're having to give him a, 10-year deal or 8-year deal, whatever it is. How do you project that out? He already has been a two-way player. You know, everyone has used the Babe Ruth comparison, and that's fine. Babe Ruth was truly only a two-way player for about 2 seasons. You know, he was a pitcher, and then he did both for about 2 years, and then he was just an outfielder and, you know, pitched occasionally for a few years.
And hot dog
that.
Eater and beer drinker.
Right. But the point is, as extraordinary as Ohtani is, how much longer can you expect him to truly do both? Because you have to figure that out in terms of whatever you're going to pay him. You're not paying him for what he already did. You're trying to pay him for what he's going to do over the next 7 years. So
you don't sound like his agent at all. You sound more like the buyer.
Well, and anyone who knows me knows that Shohei Ohtani's, I've got a man crush on that guy. That guy's unbelievable. Anytime he is on late at night, I'm watching him pitch. I mean, that's just reality. But considering what you're going to have to pay him, and look, he deserves every penny, but how do you project that out? Is he going to be a two-way player for another 2 years, another 3 years? Dare I say, could he do it for another 5 years? I mean, my goodness. You know, is he going to become maybe a hitter and maybe he becomes a closer and maybe you can manage it that way a little bit differently long-term? Well, that changes the value for him, right? The valuation of him. So I'm fascinated to see how that story is going to play out. And in the meantime, I'm going to enjoy watching him, but I don't think it's going to be the Orioles signing him. You know, I don't think I'm going out on a limb saying that, but boy, it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. And very interesting to see if he is moved, because again, the price is going to be so steep, but if you're that team, are you going to give up all those prospects and then have no assurance whatsoever that you're going to be the team that ultimately is willing to pay him the most to sign him long-term? Boy, it's a great question, and fascinated to see how it's going to play out.
I got to a fight with Shannon and Rusig about this. I got flipping. I'm like, well, why can't we think that we could sign him? You know, that's the Oriole way for the last 25 years, right? The Angelos way. We're a small market. We can't have nice things here. You know, we've had a long time of that. And that is baseball's original sin, that if LeBron hits the market in the NBA, you know, the Heat can get him. Anybody can get him. Ted Leonsis could figure it out, if they could ever figure it out, that there's no financial restriction to them signing Steph Curry or to signing any player they draft. Baseball's different. And I think the offseason makes it different, that you would say, when Lamar is available or Aaron Rodgers is available, other teams that have quarterbacks, you don't say they can't afford it or they wouldn't spend the money on it or they'd have to wreck their organization to do it. Right. Baseball's different. And the Ohtani thing is different because he is the best player. He's the best player maybe we've ever seen in regard to what he does and the value that he does it at. And you say, well, we're a major league team, but we're not allowed to play there. We can't have nice things. And that's baseball, Sid. It really is. That there are 20 teams that can't sign Shohei Ohtani. They can't have the best player. That's effed up.
Yeah, and I mean, I will say this. I mean, not every team in the NBA is signing LeBron James because he doesn't want to go to most of those markets. But your point is well taken. And I don't disagree with you. I mean, look, when I say that the Orioles aren't going to sign Shohei Ohtani, it's not because I say I don't think they should. I just know they're not going to. And the teams that aren't even going to be in that conversation.
Well, as an Oriole fan, you would then say, we can't get the best player. I mean, like that well, is that that's not.
I mean, I guess
not good.
I agree with you. I guess for me, it's tough to even talk about that when you didn't go sign Nathan Eovaldi this past offseason.
Right.
Which that was a much more reasonable, you know, that if that's not realistic, then we're not even talking. You can't even dream about Ohtani, right? So
right.
I hear you. I'm not disagreeing with you on that. But until the Orioles at least show that they're going to be in that kind of market, which they weren't this past winter, which, hey, they're 22 games over 500. So what do I know? You know, they clearly knew more than me. But yeah, that's a bummer, right? I mean, you'd love to see 15 teams trying to sign Shohei Ohtani. By the way, Ohtani and his agent would love to see 15 teams trying to sign him, because you can imagine what the price is. I mean, we might be talking about a $60 million baseball player then. So, but yeah, it's part of the, you know, it's part of the sport. It's part of why so many people have been frustrated with the sport. And, you know, it's, even though they don't have a salary cap per se, they, you know, especially the luxury tax thresholds have absolutely acted as a cap for so many of these teams. A self-induced salary cap, I guess. So, but we'll see how it plays out. Again, I don't know if Ohtani's going to be dealt at the deadline, but what a story if he's going to be. I mean, a player of that magnitude moving at the deadline would just be massive.
Yeah, you know, I tend to think he's no Deshaun Watson, but we'll find out. Luke Jones will be back talking football next week. A lot of baseball this week. He's down with the Dodgers, down with Grayson Rodriguez. You can follow all of it at Baltimore Luke, as well as at Baltimore Positive. I'm going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour this Thursday over at the Beaumont. I'm wearing my State Fair shirt. They don't have a Beaumont shirt. So I have a Guapo shirt, a State Fair shirt. I keep telling Evan, Donnie, give me a Beaumont. We don't have a Beaumont shirt. So I got to get a Beaumont hat or something to wear around here. Thursday, 2 to 5. We'll be at the Beaumont in Catonsville. All of it brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I'll have scratch-offs to give away. I had a $100 winner last week at Coco's, so that was fantastic. Hope you guys are enjoying our conversation from last week at Coco's as part of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We are celebrating 25 years here at WNST AM 1570 on the 3rd of August. We'll be at Costas. I'm basically giving away everything I have. I'm going to have copies of Purple Rain 1, 2. If you come to Costas between 11 and 4 on the 3rd, pick up anything you want. Take it home. I have all sorts of old shirts. Everything that's not glued down or tied down after 25 years, we're giving away Costas on the 3rd. Also going to be at Drug City on the 4th from 11 until 4. So that's August 3rd and 4th, celebrating 25 years. All are brought to you by the Maryland Lottery and our friends at Window Nation. I am Nestor. We are WNST. AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.